is The Fan. Just in case you missed it, it's the top five sports talkers of the day. Now, it's time for Dan Barrero's Top 5 at 5, driven by Borton Volvo. Safety has never looked so good.
Also want to remind you, we have Johnny Athletic this hour, and late in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll replay at least a decent section of our 3 o'clock on conversation with Patrick Peterson, the Vikings cornerback as well. Top five right now for Guardsy.
Talked a lot of Vikings. Let's pivot to the first Monday night football game. That was close for about a quarter.
Yeah.
It was tied 7-7 after one in Buffalo last night. And then the Bills scored 34 unanswered. They led 17-7 at the half and then scored 24 points in the third quarter. Stephon Diggs, Dan, 12 catches, 148 yards, and 3 touchdowns. 41-7 victory for Buffalo. They improved to 2-0. And they, I enjoyed watching Philadelphia's offense last night because I just thought it was obviously rolling. It was clicking. It's fun if your team's not going up against it to watch something like that. With Buffalo, and the Vikings will play them, I think, in November in Buffalo, that's really fun to watch. It's really enjoyable. Josh Allen's slinging it all over the place. To use the cliche, Dan, they are hitting on all cylinders.
They're good and they're entertaining. They're aesthetically pleasing. You know, there's our teams that are good and win a lot of games that can be kind of boring. They're not boring. They are very exciting to watch and they are very good. And, you know, it's the slog of the season. It does go on forever. So I don't want to fall into the trap of assuming that because they're off to a hot start, that means it's inevitable they're going to end up at the Super Bowl. But I think there are people going into the season who believe that in the AFC Buffalo, there's a good chance Buffalo is the team to beat. And I've seen nothing so far to indicate that that shouldn't be the case. I mean, you can make the argument they should have gone last year, right? I mean, an improbable finish for Kansas City. So they're good. They're damn good, and they are fun.
Trying to find a Dan Campbell bite here. It's going to take me a minute.
All right.
I'm going to pause it because it's a good bite. I want to hear the audio because I saw what he said. I want to hear him say it.
Okay.
The Vikings.
Is it clean?
That's what I got to make sure.
Oh, I see.
I got to make sure. Let me give you the Anthony Edwards news of the day. Ant has been fined $40,000 for using offensive and derogatory language on social media. The NBA announced Tuesday. We talked about the story last week, I think with Johnny Athletic as well, about a week ago, when Edwards made anti-gay comments while observing a group of people standing on the sidewalk during a video posted to his Instagram story. He since deleted the video, as we know, and Edwards acknowledged that his actions were inappropriate, according to the league, in a news release. He also issued an apology on Twitter last Sunday following the incident, and we know that the Wolves issued a statement as well. $40,000, Dan, fine for Anthony Edwards.
It's not a number that's going to get anybody's attention at that level, financially speaking. Is it, would a more effective punishment be you must spend an entire weekend with Cheryl Reeve lecturing you, reminding you, chatting with you? Or does that put her in a position where she's kind of being used as a prop when she's a human being? That's my one concern. There's a part of me that says, you know, educationally speaking, if you really want to, you know, sort of attempt to get to him, you'd have Cheryl Reeve in his face, talking to him, reminding him, making points as she's good at doing almost regardless of the subject. So my one hesitation in that suggestion is, as I said, I don't want to turn her into a prop. But I don't know. I assume there's a chart, sadly. Okay, well, what did he say? All right, well, that goes right around between $30,000 for this transgression and $52,000 for that transgression. I don't know what that chart, you know, there's the chart for when you go for two. What's the chart tell you when it pertains to subjects like this? In this case, offering up homophobia at its finest. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. Do we have precedent? Have players been suspended even for a game or two for commentary like he offered? I guess
Kevin Durant
don't know.
Said something somewhere in the ballpark and was fined $50,000.
But he wasn't. He wasn't suspended.
No, correct. Okay.
All right.
No, but yeah, the fine. I don't know. Is it enough? Is it not enough? Is it just right?
She, well, you know, we'll talk to Johnny about it. Beyond the statement that he released, I think via Twitter, to try to do damage control, has aunt spoken publicly in any kind of a, you know, like, setting with a even one reporter or a group of reporters?
No, okay. He's just done the statement. Right. But Wolves Media Day is coming up Monday. Wild Media Day is tomorrow.
Oh my
God. Wild have a game on Sunday, a preseason game.
You're making that up.
I am not. I think it's against Chicago.
Yeah.
The Wild have their media day tomorrow. The Wolves have their media day on Monday.
Wow.
So winter sports season is upon us.
Yeah.
So I couldn't find the audio yet, and just in scrolling through 10
Dan
seconds
Campbell?
At a time, Dan Campbell, the Minnesota Vikings, take on. I like Dan Campbell, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think his team likes him. I think he's got their ear for now. As we know, that can obviously change very, very quickly. He mentioned that he was going to watch Monday Night Football. And I guess this was on the team's flagship radio station, so it wasn't a press conference. So it would have been good to read the story. But they asked him, okay, did you watch Monday Night Football? Did you take a look at what the Vikings had to offer? You've already played Philadelphia, so you've got the common opponent. You can maybe match some things up. This is what he said. How did you watch Monday Night Football? Normally, like any fan would, I fell over backwards in my chair drunk after the second half. I couldn't even take notes anymore. Woke up, couldn't read my notes, but I'm back this morning, took some aspirin, we're good.
Oh.
Then he later was asked how he would actually take in the game. He said, normally I'll watch it tonight, going to watch it live. Most of the time the coaches will still be game planning from what they know, blah, 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 blah. It was a very Mike Tyson answer.
It is, actually. You're
I think
right.
For Dan Campbell. A very Mike Tyson answer.
It
and
is.
Truthfully relatable. I wasn't drinking last night, but I certainly thought about it at different points in the game.
That's our next opponent. That is a Sunday. Is that a nooner?
Sunday noon. U.S. Bank Stadium.
We call it in the business a trap game. The assumption is it's the Lions, and we're back home, and we're going to be mad as hell. We're not going to take it anymore, and it's an easy victory for us. I don't think it's an easy victory. Now, the Lions can sometimes hand you stuff. I'd be very wary of this particular ball game. You don't want to go to London 1-2, do you?
No.
You don't want to go to London 1-2. I mean, that's a very winnable game, but the Saints are weird. Their quarterback is up and down. So I don't think you want to, you know, risk the possibility of something funky happening there. Speaking of funky, your Golden Gophers made official yesterday, I believe, that Rashad Bateman is done.
Chris Amonbell.
Rashad
Bateman's doing pretty well for the Ravens.
That's another Gopher receiver. Yeah, he's doing very well. Chris Amonbell is done for the season, and it's bad news on several for all the obvious reasons. Most established receiver. The other thing that occurred that hit me was my understanding is more than anything else, Michigan State has been vulnerable to the pass. So how much does that hurt our chances? Because even if you think, well, we got other receivers who could evolve into important roles, are they ready to do so as quickly as this week? Because it appears that as good as we've been running the ball, we'd be fools not to attempt to throw against Michigan State.
It's weird. It's a weird way that I feel about this because I'm not going to say it's devastating, but it hurts. He's their best receiver.
Absolutely.
He was their best receiver, most established receiver. He was kind of the leader of the room. They do have other guys, including the tight end who has started to emerge. They have other receivers that are good. Dalen Wright is the Texas A&M transfer who caught the touchdown right before the half, right after Chris Amonbell got hurt. He's the guy that they've been kind of waiting on to, what's the right way to say this, unleash him. He's their most talented receiver. Chris Amonbell says that. So I would imagine it's his time now. And Michael Brown Stevens has also had moments. But so they have guys. Like, this shouldn't shut down the passing game by any stretch of the imagination. But it's no doubt that it hurts because he's just solid. I mean, he's 50-50 ball guy. He's red zone guy. He's known Tanner for like 7 years because they came in the same class. They knew each other. So it hurts. But I would rather have him be hurt, as weird as this sounds, than Mo Ibrahim, if that makes sense.
You know,
like they have. So it's I'm kind of both fields. The other guys have to. They do. It is their turn now, and they've got to somehow. It's up to them to figure out how to get around it. But it definitely hurts.
I'm gonna guess Michigan State is favored by 5.
They were not by that many.
Oh, not even that many. Okay,
I haven't checked the line, but I had recently. But I had seen a lot of money coming in on the Gophers. And okay. I thought I saw somewhere that the Gophers were even favored.
Really?
By a point or two. Yeah.
Whoa.
So,
a lot thickens.
The
Michigan State coming off, they lost to Washington on the road, correct?
Yes. They got down early and never really recovered.
Washington's got the old Indiana quarterback who was great there, then awful while being injured. Now he's healthy again and is off to a great start. Throwing the ball, was very effective throwing the ball all over the field.
Four touchdowns.
Against Michigan State and the Spartans last week.
Yeah, last year the Spartans, I think, had one of the worst secondaries statistically in college football, certainly in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I'm looking forward to the game. I've been waiting for this game since July, basically, because we knew what the non-conference was going to be. The Michigan State steam, I mean, we've seen it. We saw it with the Gophers.
Yeah.
When you jump up and have a huge season, the difficult thing is to come back and do it again when you're not accustomed to it.
When you're not
right?
one of the big,
in 2020.
When you're not one of the big knockers.
Yeah, there's teams, and you know they lost their best running back. They got a couple of running backs in the transfer portal like everybody does. Their quarterback is a competitive guy. PJ talked a lot about him today. He loves him. So I'm just looking forward to the game, but it's a buzzkill that the one guy in the receiving core that you didn't want to get hurt got hurt. And so that'll be, he's a lot to replace.
Michigan State went from, I think, ranked 11th to ranked 26th. So they don't make the top 25 on the basis of their most recent hiccup. But again, this game is in East Lansing. What is it, a 2:30 game?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be there.
I will be there. Dylan Bundy will be in Kansas City. He is opposing Zach Greinke tonight. We do this out of habit. We do this out of exercise. Arise, Correa, Miranda, Gordon, Urshela, Sanchez, Cave, Celestino, and Wallner, who I hope got that home run ball, will bat ninth and play right field.
Did we ever get that resolved?
I don't know. Hopefully they follow it up tonight.
My guess is Bally Sports North will do an entire segment on it pregame. It might even be during the game as well, frankly.
Just a reminder, with the Minnesota Twins, I'm pulling up the standings here. That's the NBA standings. That's not going to help me. Pulling up the standings here. They are 7 games back right now in the Central, which means they need some help.
They did indeed do. And the White Sox and Guardians, I think, are playing each other. White Sox trying to take one last shot at catching. The Guardians, who've now fashioned an almost legitimate division-leading record.
They are ahead by 4 games in the American League Central. 80-67. That's not horrible.
No.
That's not a horrible record at all.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, I mean, by help, I would say, if they lose their remaining 15 games, then maybe we have a chance.
Maybe. But we have to win some games, too. But we've got the Royals.
Yeah. Now, they usually help us.
We've got the Royals.
No question. Is that it?
That's it.
Johnny Athletic right around the corner. How did he consume last night's Vikings loss to the Eagles? We'll talk a little bit about his own reaction to the Anthony Edwards fine, now official. What do we say, $35,000?
$40,000.
Probably a distinction there without a difference. And who knows what else with our guy Johnny. And then Patrick Peterson, probably about $555.
And he's on the Dan Marino right now.
Yes, he indeed is. Johnny Athletic on the Connecticut Water Systems hotline. And I got to say, Gardzi, that it was kind of a big night for me Saturday evening, the big Hall of Fame event in St. Louis Park. But nothing, I think, raised my spirits more, heartened me more dramatically than when Johnny joined at the house later that evening to, you know, break bread and raise a glass.
Fellowship.
I almost felt like Johnny was kind of the life of the party. Do you agree, Gardzi? Do you see it the same way?
It was great to see him.
It was absolutely wonderful to see you. Hi, John.
You know, your lovely wife called me earlier in the week, and unfortunately, I had a bachelor party to go to in Iowa.
A bachelor party.
I was very sorry to miss it, as you can imagine, at my age, there's not many bachelor parties that come around anymore.
Yeah.
So that one's been on the books for a few months, and I couldn't wiggle out of that one.
There's not a chance in hell that anything at that bachelor party was as exciting as what took place when Lavelli Neal III posed arm in arm with Mayo Clinic big knocker Bill Maurice, both of them showing off the fact that they had no front teeth.
Oh, man. So yes, you're definitely your guest contingent had fewer front teeth than my guest contingent, yes. And I'm surprised about that, quite frankly, for the guys that I hang out with.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Well, in any case, I know you were there in spirit. Do you want to start with an apology today, or am I embarrassing you by putting you on the spot that way?
Well, I think that's one of your favorite things to do, and it's probably the least that I can do, given that I missed your festivities. So please, let's just pile on as much as
you
can.
Well, in all honesty, I think you were one of the Jackals who immediately after one victory in a row fell into that trap suggest that, you know, it's almost like this new guy, this our Heavenly Father guy, is just going to sprinkle fairy dust all over the team, all over the TCO Performance Center, all over the field, and magically, whatever needs to happen is going to happen, that he has that level of influence. And then we go to Philadelphia, and it turns out that whatever dust he applied to the field had absolutely no positive impact for the purple. So do you want to, back away a little bit on the notion that the Messiah has arrived here? It might be that's what he is, but can we wait a month before we make that assumption that he's going to make everything better automatically?
Yeah, I think I'm actually scheduling an appointment with a tattoo removal artist to take the culture shield off my chest.
Ah, the culture shield, yes.
You know, I'd put that right on the solar plexus and you know, I was ready to go, and I had bought all in, and now I am having a few second thoughts. And I had to think, Dan, on, you know, last night, maybe in the second quarter, if a certain old ball coach was sitting on the ranch in Kentucky and having himself a glass of wine and maybe a little bit of a smile creasing that old Grinch face as the Vikings were getting just hammered by the Eagles.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I definitely had the feeling listening or watching the TV broadcast last night that the color commentator might have had a pregame or day before conversation with Mike Zimmer, because Troy Aikman, there were a couple of times, made sure to credit Zim for, I think it had to do with one of our defensive backs, if I'm not mistaken.
Sam Dantzler.
Teaching him how to tackle, basically, right?
Yep.
And it was fairly frontal, and it seemed to be fairly transparent that Aikman had decided that one of the things he was going to do was to try to, nudge acknowledge, I guess, a better way to put it, Mike Zimmer to the positive.
I absolutely noticed that when it happened, and I also kind of noticed that Cam Dantzler ended up finished the game on the bench, and they went with a Caleb Evans down the stretch in the second half there. But I do think, though, it's worthwhile to kind of inject a little bit of
realism
of Zimmer positivity.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have all kind of watched and seen, you know, the way that O'Connell's arrival has been covered, and I do think that in general he's done a really good job of lightening the load, of connecting with players, of doing some of the things that needed to be done. But certainly, you know, a lot of times when you have an embarrassing loss like the Vikings had, you'll see a coach say, "That was all on me, and I've got to be better." And it doesn't really ring very true often. It seems a little disingenuous, but I do think that he needed to fall on the sword after that game, because that was a team that just looked completely unprepared on both sides of the ball, which is really disappointing given that I thought they outcoached LaFleur and the Packers staff in week one. And to be that overwhelmed from a schematic and strategic standpoint, and to look that shocked at what they saw from Jalen Hurts and what they saw from the aggressive Philly defense, I think that was pretty glaring.
I think the lesson regarding that point for me is a not so subtle reminder that there aren't that many geniuses out there. There just aren't. Now, ultimately, maybe our coach will prove that he is worthy of that particular description. But there ain't that many geniuses, man. There's only two or three coaches in any generation that I think is worthy of that. And so I think what we saw is there's a yin and the yang to it, and there's no talking to everybody in the hall, creating a better culture, the culture shield, all that. None of that guarantees anything on a Monday night in Philadelphia. It just doesn't. And again, I'll say that doesn't mean he's a bad coach or can't be a great coach, but I think it tells us that I really do believe there were some people who were starting to think, even after just one game, that, well, he's just going to make everything better. He's going to have better ideas, and we're going to have better game plans, and we're going to have better play calls, and everything's going to be wonderful. And I think the jolt was, no, it rarely works that way. Winning is hard, even for Kevin O'Connell. Winning is going to be hard, and there's going to be tough decisions you're going to have to make, and there's going to be tough come-to-Jesus conversations that you're going to have. And I'm hoping that brings us back to that point where it isn't going to always be slime and duckies and bunnies and let's chat about this in the hallway and say hello to each other, that it's a hard grind. And it the longer he's in it, he's going to realize that there's a grind to it, no matter how happy he tries to make us all feel about it.
Right, and I remember you and I certainly talked about this a lot over the summer and even through training camp, is that a coach's, and certainly Kevin O'Connell is in this group, a coach's regime doesn't start until there's some real adversity. And he had not felt any of that through training camp. He had not felt any of that in the off-season program. He didn't feel any of that in week one against the Packers, and now he's feeling it. And I do think, like, it is as important to point out that as poorly as it did go, it can rebound too. Like, they can pull things together and get back on track and have a good week against the Lions and have a good rest of the season. Certainly one blowout loss to a very good Philadelphia Eagles team on the road doesn't mean that we hired the wrong guy, that he's completely in over his head. But it also just does go to show that you do have to kind of take this in stride, and you do have to look at the context of it and try not to get either too high or too low. That's not fun. That's not necessarily the hot take sports radio that a lot of people like to listen to. It certainly wasn't what I was seeing in my Twitter feed last night, but that's reality. And here I do think is the key for Kevin O'Connell going forward and for this offense going forward is, I think he benefited in week one a little bit from the element of surprise. There was not any tape out there really on what this offense was going to look like with Cousins and Jefferson and Thielen and Cook and all and everyone going at full strength. And I think the Packers really kind of were taken aback by that because they just didn't have much to study. The Eagles certainly had a lot more to look at in looking at the film from week one, had a little bit better expectation of what was going to be coming at them. And they looked ready for every single thing that happened out there on the field on both sides of the ball. And they just seemed to be a step ahead, a play ahead of them, the Vikings, the whole way through. So the Vikings will have to make some adjustments. They'll have to figure some things out and tighten some things up. It can be done, but I remember Chip Kelly back in the day with the Philadelphia Eagles and how they just came out of the gates flying against the Washington and blew them out. And it was like, here they go. And maybe a year or two later, he's fired. So, we have to look at the long view here, but they were humbled a little bit and now they have some adversity to have to deal with going forward here.
Let's get to a Vikings talking point that I call Whatever Happened to Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin is the single set, first and 10 from the 25. Cousins under center, puts JJ in motion on a jet. Hand off Dalvin, stutter steps at the line. Josh Sweat met him at the point of attack, and that's going to be a loss of one. Good field position for Kirk and the Vikings, first and 10 from their own 40. Jefferson in motion, handoff Dalvin up the middle. He gets through the point of attack, hit by several Eagles at the 42, and he will thrust ahead close to the 43. So for Dalvin, that'll be a run of four. Cousins, back to pass, throws left flat to Dalvin. He bobbled it, probably would have been best to just let it fall down. And several Eagles converge on him for a loss of one.
Three carries, 3 yards in the first half for Dalvin Cook. Here's where you mentioned Mike Zimmer and how he might have been celebrating last night. Here's where he might have been screaming at the TV and saying, I don't care how cute and fancy you think your passing game is and how much sophistication you think you can bring to it, but especially as long as your quarterback is number 8, Kirk Cousins, you better intersperse the running game. You better make sure that you're getting some stuff done on the ground if you want to get the best out of many quarterbacks, but especially a quarterback who, no matter who is coaching him, is wired the way number 8 is. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and then Kevin O'Connell said it after the game. He said that they need to run the ball more, and that was kind of a thing that made you think a little bit, because we heard Mike Zimmer say the same thing forever and ever, and we thought he was a dinosaur. Now, I do think that there is a middle ground between what Zimmer wanted to do and throwing the ball 100 times a game, and I think that O'Connell realizes they have to get back to that. There are two things that stuck out in the running game last night. One is they just ran so few plays in the first half. I mean, it was 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out. And so there weren't many opportunities to get Dalvin in any kind of rhythm. Secondly, man, that Eagles front seven sure seemed to really bully the interior line of the Vikings, and Dalvin was not having very many creases to hit and openings to hit in the line, because they were just getting controlled up front and manhandled in some cases, which has been a lingering issue for the Garrett Bradbury era of this offensive line forever. And finally, one of the things that has made Dalvin Cook incredible over the start to his career when he's been healthy is he has had a knack for making something out of nothing and turning what looks like a 2-yard loss into a 5-yard gain, what looks like a 2-yard gain into an 8-yard gain, in addition to some of the splash plays. And we haven't seen that yet from Dalvin either. But I do think that they have to try to get him in more of a rhythm, and they have to find a way to keep their interior line from getting completely collapsed so he has tacklers right at his feet as soon as he gets the handoff. And that's going to be an issue going forward that they're going to have to combat.
Let's take a pause. I want to talk more about this ballgame, particularly the Kirk Cousins factor, and a little bit about the defensive approach and still perhaps paying the price for the baggage that Ed Donatell feels regarding that blown 4th and 26 almost 2 decades ago as the Packers defensive coordinator. It's like in another lifetime. And we'll also get Johnny Athletic's reaction to the news that Anthony Edwards is facing a fine of, what did we say, $40,000 for the homophobic comments he made via, I think it was Insta. All of that in part two with Johnny.
On the Fan.
There's ups and there are downs. It is indeed the nature of it. I'll pass along the cliche that we're going to hear a lot this week. Vikings probably aren't as good as they looked against the Green Bay Packers, and they're probably not as bad as they looked against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Excuse me?
It's funny, though, because after last week, for the Duckies and the Bunnies, it was sky's the limit. You could riff and draw all sorts of conclusions on the basis of one game, and now we're being told, be careful about, you know, picking that low-hanging fruit this week as it relates to this particular loss. The truth is always somewhat in the middle. That said, I will add to this, Johnny Athletic, who's back with us via the Connecticut Water Systems hotline. If I'm a Kirk Cousins fan, I find not losing to Philly and Philly, the way my quarterback played yesterday, disturbing. I thought it was a disturbing performance that really harkens back to many he's had under the previous coach, in which as the game went on, he looked more and more flustered, more and more concerned. Made bad decisions, made robotic decisions other times, and then just said, basically just started flinging the ball up on consecutive plays into the left side of the Philadelphia Eagles end zone. How did you view it?
Yeah, I mean, here's the way that I look at it, and I think it's natural for Vikings fans to put a lot of the blame at his feet, and he absolutely deserves it. I mean, he was making careless throws. Not all of it. Again, like, I do want to emphasize, this was not all on Kirk Cousins. You know, Irv Smith with the drop, Justin Jefferson with the bad route on the one interception, the offensive line not opening holes in the running game, the defense being so terrible in the first half that it really put everyone in a poor position. Like, all of that is true. But in those instances, and we've said it time and again, talking about Kirk Cousins and why he is not an elite quarterback in this league is that when everything is breaking down around you, it's your elite quarterback who is able to settle people down and find ways to keep you in games. I'll just make one comparison. And even though the Bengals are 0-2 right now, Joe Burrow, just I think in week one, was through four interceptions in a game, was not playing well at all, but he hung in there and he made a drive late in the game, got them to score the touchdown that tied it. They missed the extra point and then they lose in overtime because of some kicking issues. But he's a quarterback who you feel like you have a chance even when it's not going perfectly, and that you have a belief that he's going to find some magic to summon to keep you in it, and the team derives strength from that. That does not happen with Kirk Cousins. And you're right, like, I mean, in the second half, to be in the on the opponent's side of the field as often as they were and not be able to generate any real offense, and to get to the point where the blitzes were coming at him and it looked like he'd never seen a blitz before and he was just throwing it up on a wing and a prayer, that's not what you want from your marquee quarterback. You need more from Kirk Cousins in those situations, and they just did not get that last night.
They most assuredly did not. The Lions, it's an interesting matchup this week because we have spit up against the Lions before, certainly under the previous regime, even as recently as last season, as I recall it. But then you could say, well, they're still the Lions. I mean, so this is obviously a game that you need to win because you're back at home. Is this a challenging game, or am I overrating the threat that the Lions represent?
Yeah, I don't think you're overrating it at all, Dan, because, you know, forever and ever, the Lions have always been the nookie blankie that the Vikings cuddle with when things are down. And they usually come in and they're hapless, and the Vikings can get a win and stabilize things and maybe even build momentum going forward. That is not the case anymore with these guys. They should have lost to the Lions twice last year, and even when they were terrible. This year, they're improved. I don't know that their challenge for the NFC North title improved, but they are not the easy out they once were. And remember, the team, this Lions team put up 35 on the Philadelphia Eagles last week, the same defense that the Vikings made look like the 85 Bears and the 70s Steel Curtain, you know, matched up and combined into one. And so they can move the ball. I think they have some trouble stopping teams, and their defense is struggling a little bit, so that should be a good news for Cousins in this offense. But I expect the Lions to come in and fight on Sunday, and I would not be shocked if they found a way to win. I haven't made it a pick yet. I got to think about it more and look at it a little bit more before I make a pick for the game, but these Lions are feisty, and they're not going to be any pushovers on Sunday at US Bank.
So there was a lot of discussion on the TV broadcast, consternation from Troy Aikman, about the shell defense that we were playing deep,
yes,
allowing a quarterback who really is probably improving as a passer, but is not really established his bona fides as a great passer yet, making his job, it seemed, very easy to just pitch and catch and not have to get the ball into very tight windows. You know, Ed Donatell's the guy. I'm sure he's sick and tired of the 4th-and-26 play that cost him his job in Green Bay in the postseason, going back basically close to two decades. But it did really feel as if, well, he's still trying to set up a defense because he feels like he's traumatized by giving up the big play in that situation. Now, ultimately, the irony is we did give up the big play anyway, but I did find it confounding that whatever we decided to go into for that game, for whatever the reason, it clearly was making it too easy for this quarterback and these receivers. And maybe we got better at it in the second half, but at that point, I don't even know how hard Philly was trying to score. It was a very different game. But in the first half, obviously, they approached 400 yards. And even when they got penalties, they were able to recover from those the series of penalties, including the illegal man downfield penalties, by getting, you know, 15 yards here, 16 yards there, involving wide open receivers.
Yeah, so two things on that. One is, I think you take a little bit of encouragement that in the second half they were able to maybe make some adjustments and keep them out of the end zone. But I don't want to give too much credit because just last week against the Packers, every Vikings fan really kind of explained away that, the Vikings in the second half, they kind of took their foot off the gas. They were just playing the clock and the score and weren't really going for the throat the way they did in the first half when they just torched the Packers. And so not a big deal on that front. So we can't really give the Vikings defense a whole lot more credit than we gave the Packers defense for having success in the second half of week one. Secondly, though, my guess is that the Vikings were trying to play that approach because they didn't believe that Jalen Hurts was capable of putting together 9, 10, 12 play drives and go all the way down the field. They thought that eventually he would make a mistake. But the problem there was these throws were so easy yeah. for him to make, yep. and the receivers were so open, it was literally almost impossible to make mistakes. And so I thought it was a very passive game plan. It seemed like they were playing a little bit scared of the Eagles' skill position guys, and they just got absolutely obliterated in the first half. And so because of that, it allowed the Eagles to do whatever they wanted in the second half without having to worry too much. And I think that it was a head-scratcher to me. I don't understand why they approached it that way.
Anthony Edwards fined $40,000. For the comments he made, well, at least I don't know when he made them, but were revealed, I believe, last week or the week before. A lot of people had said, and I think written, that there was a need here for game suspensions. How did you feel about what ends up being simply a fine for Anthony Edwards?
Yeah, I don't know about a suspension, Dan, in terms of they have suspended players before for making comments during a game toward officials and things like that. Usually players who have made comments away from the court, like just on social media or toward, everyday people, typically just get fined. That's the precedent that has been set. So I do think the league was following protocols and how they typically handle these types of situations by giving the fine and not giving the suspension. No question, though, that Anthony Edwards' star has been tarnished a little bit through this, and it will be interesting to see like how he handles this going forward with media day on Monday, and if there's any other things that he does to try and show that he is taking steps to learn about things. Again, I don't think this has to be the end of Anthony Edwards. I think he can learn and grow from this situation, but I also think he hurt a lot of people, and he has to maybe make some signs that he's taking this thing seriously and doing some reflecting and trying to figure out why he used the words that he did and the way that he did it, and how he can not do that anymore. And so a fine will help. Certainly sponsors backing away from him as they have will help. Messaging from internally will help, but ultimately it's going to be on Edwards to show that he's taking this to heart and that he's moving forward with it. And this is his first public big-time mistake here, and so we'll see how he handles that.
Thank you, Johnny. We will chat with you again next week after a big victory over the Detroit Lions.
Calling it. All right. Can't wait.
Thank you. John Athletic helping us out on this Tuesday. When we come back, at the start of the show today, we had a very good conversation with our new weekly guest during the season, Vikings cornerback Patrick Peterson. We're going to play back that conversation, give you a chance to hear what he had to say about what happened to his defense and what has to get better. And I think a couple of other interesting observations about Jalen Hurts. That is.